Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
It is Monday, February 28th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar, and this is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. We are back live after 2 days. Well, off. It wasn't off to you, for you folks. I just doubled up my work in the beginning of the week. Two great interviews with Naomi Klein on Thursday about Wisconsin and Eugene Jaracki on Friday about his documentary, Reagan. I watched a little bit of the Oscars last night. Don't want to talk about it. Probably will in the post show. Reluctantly. Don't really care. One guy, apparently after he got off stage, talked about unions. They were all, every single person who walked on that stage last night was a union member. Everyone who brought you that program was a union member. I had hoped to see a little bit more out of them. On this program, we will be speaking to David Dayen from Fire Dog Lake. He spent the last 4 days in Wisconsin. I think he got back to L.A. this morning. I don't think that guy ever sleeps, but he will give us an update on what he saw over the weekend. Massive protests, as you may or may not know. If you watched any of the news stations this weekend, all you would know is that Imam is a really wonderful person to be a supermodel. If you watch CNN, I don't know what infomercial they had on MSNBC. We will talk to David Dayen in Libya at the moment. United States getting more aggressive. My understanding, President Obama has issued some form of national emergency. I'm not quite sure what's involved in it, but it means that we can get more aggressive over there. And Secretary of State Clinton calling for Gaddafi to leave. We will have more on that as the program continues in Iraq. Still enjoying George Bush's program of freeance and peance. As Day of Rage last Friday. What? I thought there was democracy there.
Hey, what happened?
Also, a blockbuster story on fracking in the New York Times this weekend. We will talk about that and a couple other disturbing environmental news. But let's start off with some good news, shall we? Y'all remember Judith Regan? Judith Regan was a, she's a book publisher, I believe. And she also worked in the Murdoch Empire, I think, at, I'm not sure what the name of the book publishing, it was Regent Books or something like, one of those right-wing book, books in the Murdoch Empire. And she was dismissed, ostensibly because she came out with the O.J. Simpson book, which people found sort of offensive. Because apparently he was involved in supposedly killing his wife. I may be one of the few people in this country who did not follow that trial. But she was fired, and then she filed suit, wrongful termination. At the time, there was a story that one of the executives in the Murdoch Empire had attempted, perhaps successfully, I'm not quite sure, to secure her silence during the vetting process of Bernie Kerik. What does anyone know what jail he's in right now?
I think he's on Rikers, right?
Is he on Rikers? I'm not sure.
I think so.
I'm not sure which jail he's in. He was Rudy Giuliani's number two. I mean, from the time that he, like, drove a limo for him to the time that he was police commissioner, Of course, George Bush sent him over to train Iraqi forces for 6 to 8 months. This is all true. This is not made up. This is not a fiction. This is, I'm not telling you a funny story.
He's in Maryland Federal
Prison. He's in Maryland Federal Prison. And, of course, Rudy Giuliani pushed him to be Homeland Security Chief under the Bush administration. And George Bush brought him. And apparently then they vetted. Apparently there was some issues. He's not in prison because of not paying taxes on his nanny, right? I think it had to do with something with, like, mob stuff.
Tax fraud.
Tax fraud! It doesn't matter. I'm sure he's a nice guy. And we all know the story that he used one of the apartments donated to 9/11 workers above Ground Zero that was there so that guys combing through the debris and the death and the pollutants in the air could take a rest. Well, Bernie Kerik misunderstood and thought, oh, you mean that's a crash pad where I can take my women I'm having an affair with? Oh, great. Thank you. And Giuliani took his gumat, or whatever it is they say, there. So this story came out that somebody had told Judith Regan to keep her mouth shut during the vetting process. Now, when you don't tell things to federal investigators, that's a felony. And when you encourage someone to lie to federal investigators, that is also a felony. Well, it turns out that we now know who that person was that told Judith Regan not to open her mouth. Was it some big political operative? No. Or yes? I guess that's the answer is yes and no. It was Roger Ailes. Yes, that Roger Ailes, president of Fox News. Huh. Telling one of his employees to lie for the benefit of Rudy Giuliani. Are you shocked by that? I'm not. What could be enjoyable, though, is that we very well may see Roger Ailes doing some of his programming work right alongside Bernie Kerik. There's word that he may be indicted any day now. So, keep your fingers crossed. I figure I'd start the show off with some good news. I don't know what's going on over there at Fox, but like Hannity losing radio stations, Beck losing radio stations. Something to keep an eye on. So, folks, we should start a campaign to send Roger Ailes files. Like one of those little files that you try and get out of prison with. Just give him like fingernail files or something, like a shiv. Protect him. You need a shiv to protect himself, too. So good luck to you, Roger. I'll send you a cake. Enjoy prison. You know, the good thing is I think they probably show Fox News in there. You probably have some fans. We're going to take a break. When we come back, David Dane. We are back. Sam Cedar, the Majority Report on the phone. David Dayan, the reporter from the Fire Dog Lake News. And he apparently, are you back in L.A., David?
I am back in L.A. now. Thank you for having me on the show.
And thanks for coming. You spent the weekend in Madison. I was reading your tweets and your dispatches. Tell us about what was going on there.
Yeah, I was in Madison since last Wednesday. And I'm just very inspired by the remarkable work of the protesters who was, you know, largely driven forward by the Teaching Assistance Association from the UW-Madison, some students, union members. It's really sort of a youth labor alliance in terms of these protests, which ended up culminating on Saturday in 100,000 people in Madison in a snowstorm. Standing outside and showing their opposition to this attempt to break unions by Governor Scott Walker. In addition, you have to be inspired and incredibly fascinated by the responsiveness of the legislative Democrats to the voice of the people in Wisconsin. And some of this is particular to Wisconsin because it's still very much a labor party, the Democratic Party in the state. But if you follow politics on a national level and you see Democrats as the endlessly compromising force in national politics, that's nowhere to be seen here in Wisconsin, where the Democrats have sort of been cleaved off from the national party. You have the state Senate Democrats still out of the state denying a quorum on the budget repair bill, which would strip collective bargaining rights. And you have the Assembly Democrats who played this out for 63 hours of debate, refusing to allow a final vote until the Republicans in the state assembly finally called a vote at 1 a.m. It lasted about 15 seconds, and some there still believe it was done illegally, with some of the Republican members pushing the buttons of their neighbors to vote yes to help those other Republicans who weren't in the chamber.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's still being litigated at the moment. But the Assembly Democrats have been very vocal in the middle of the protests. I saw a lady who's an Assembly Democrat who had a skin cancer surgery on Tuesday, was back in the Assembly on Wednesday, and was there again last night with a bandage on her face, saying that this was the best that civil disobedience had to offer. As we know, last night, there was this probability that the protesters would be ejected from the building, that hundreds of them prepared to be arrested, prepared to engage in nonviolent civil disobedience. They called the bluff of the Capitol Police, and the Capitol Police stood down and allowed the protesters to hold the building and stay overnight. Now, there's an update to that this morning, where even though the building is supposed to be open, the Capitol Police are not letting anyone into the building, at least as of about a half hour ago. The governor has to deliver almost like his State of the Union address, a budget address, tomorrow. And this is for his next budget. You know, we're kind of talking about two budgets here. There's this budget repair bill to fix the rest of this fiscal year, and then there's the next budget. Walker kind of conflates these a lot because he says, well, we have to strip public employee rights to fill a $3 billion budget gap. Well, the $3 billion budget gap is for next year. The budget repair bill is where the stripping of the public employee rights is. So anyway, he has this meeting, joint session of the legislature in the Capitol tomorrow. And it's pretty clear to me that he wants the protesters out of there before then.
And so, and can they close off the Capitol tomorrow, too? I mean, can they basically keep people out of there for 36 hours?
It's illegal under the state constitution for them to close the building. The building is supposed to be open from 8 to 6. There's actual language in the state constitution that no public building of this type can be closed. What they're doing is restricting access. There are still people in the building who were there overnight, and they have not been ejected. They're not letting new people in, and they're also restricting supplies. That makes it much harder for those who are inside the building to stay in there and, stay overnight. So I don't know how it's going to play out over the next 36 hours, but I know the ACLU is working on this. I know local unions are working on this. I know that the Capital City Leadership Committee, which is sort of the ad hoc group that has been founded, is working very heavily on this as well.
All right. So let me ask you this. What is the importance of the physical occupation of the building? I mean, is that simply a mile marker? I mean, is it a way to maintain the pressure? I mean, tell me about that.
I think it's a couple things. I think it's a signifier for the persistence of these protests. It's a symbol. It's something that is high profile enough for newspapers around the state to continue to report on it. But also, and it's hard to explain until you're there, but the Capitol building is its own ecosystem. I mean, it's an organizing hub. I can't tell you how many people I've seen there with petitions, not just to recall some of these state senators, but also to work on upcoming legislative races. They're kind of fortunate in that there's a state Supreme Court race coming up, and those are actual elected races in Wisconsin. There are some assembly seats where Walker took in some Republicans for his cabinet. So there are some open legislative seats available that'll be, I think those are going down in May. So there's organizing going on inside this building, in addition to all the protests and the pressure and the physical presence. It's the nerve center of this movement right now. This youth labor movement, this progressive movement, whatever you want to call it. And so the symbolism of the fact that they stood down the police, they stood down Governor Walker, who had to give the order to close the building, cannot be, explained away very easily. So there are many facets to why I think it's important to keep the Capitol occupied, or why the protesters believe that.
Do you have any sense? Did you get any sense while you were there as to, and I imagine the maintenance of of the protests at the building are strengthening the resolve of those 14 Democratic senators who have basically, performed this filibuster by feet. Do you have any sense of their ability to hold out as a group?
Right. I mean, I think that what you've said is correct. It's strengthened their resolve in a big way. And, it's pretty remarkable when we see the difference between the National Democratic Party and what's going on in Wisconsin and how these state senators are holding out. It's quite something. I don't think that the protesters, even if you really talk to them about it, think that they could hold out forever, the state senators. At some point, they're going to come back. They're hoping to keep up enough pressure to, get some movement among the Republicans to make this too hot to handle. I've confirmed, and I'm about to post about this, that there's one state senator, a Republican, Dale Schultz, who is a no vote. The state Senate is 19 Republicans and 14 Democrats in Wisconsin. So if this is true, and I believe it is, I have it confirmed that he told a Democratic state senator that he's a no on the bill. That would mean one is down and there would be two to go. And if they get two other Republicans to flip, then, that's it.
You're at 15 to 18 right now, if you include that guy. Okay. And so that's the idea.
I was going to say, keep in mind that in the assembly, there were four Republican no votes on the bill. So there's been bipartisan support against the stripping of public employees' collective bargaining rights and for workers' rights down the line, and no Democrat has wavered in any way whatsoever on this bill. So, you know, that possibility exists. Now, if it doesn't happen and the state Senate Democrats can't hold out any longer and they have to come back and they don't get the three Republicans that they need, there are other options out there. I'm told that they will seek court relief. They will seek an injunction against this. I don't think it's going to be put into place right away.
Okay, and I know you got to go, but I just go one more. Now, we've seen an absence, to a certain extent, of any type of reinforcement or any political clout from national Democrats. From, you know, Sherrod Brown said something a week ago. I don't know how prominent he has been there. So it's clear that there's not a huge sort of influx from national Democrats to support what's going on there. Has there been any resistance? In other words, it's clear that the people in Madison don't need the national Democrats. And frankly, the most important press is really the local press. Although it would be nice to get this to spread across the country because there are other states facing this. But has there been any indication that there's been any type of pressure to, like, let's resolve this from the national Democrats, or are they just basically just staying out?
I think they're staying out, and I think it is spreading. I think you're seeing, you know, you saw a lot of solidarity rallies on the weekend in Ohio. Thousands of people have come out to try to stop a very similar bill, one that actually goes a little bit further because it doesn't exempt police and fire in Ohio. In Indiana, the state Democrats in the House walked out, and they're also in Illinois. And, you know, Indiana Democrats are probably to the right of Wisconsin Republicans.
Right.
And yet they're out holding out, and they already got the Indiana Republicans to stop their right to work for less bill from moving forward. But they're still staying out to protest the school voucher bill. So I think that's incredibly remarkable. I really think what we're seeing is a new progressive, democratic, labor-based, workers' rights, middle-class, working families-based conception of the party. And it's very focused, and I think the people in Wisconsin know what they want to do. They're setting a model for the nation, and it's something that other states can pick up. You know, I guess state legislatures are a little bit closer to the people, and so they're more responsive to the people's needs. And that's what we're seeing in Wisconsin. The people in large numbers said no to this very extreme legislation proposed by the governor. They're educating each other about it. They're educating the members of the legislature about it. And the legislature is responding. And there's this symmetry between the elected officials and the grassroots, the progressive grassroots, that we don't often see throughout the rest of the country. And I hope that this is a model moving forward.
I do, too. Give me one more question. Sorry. Are there any institutions that you know of out there that I guess maybe it's simply labor is the institution that bridges these gaps here in terms of state to state to state, because you're looking at politics that we want to spread nationally, but what we're really looking for is them to spread almost to locality to locality to locality, as opposed to sort of some larger national umbrella.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can best view Wisconsin as a model moving forward, and the fact that these other Midwestern states, which have a strong labor component, have picked it up is important. You know, that's not every state in the nation, quite frankly.
Right.
You know, there are these southern states that are right-to-work states that where it's going to be very difficult to break through and move forward. I think there are going to be more losses than wins at the outset for labor. But this has really energized the movement at an individual level. You know, you see people out there saying, you know, private sector, non-union, I support what's going. You know, I support the protest. That's important to get that sort of class consciousness and class unity. You know, that, yes, that comes from, you know, having a strong union movement, but it's also something where people, ordinary people, can band together and say no to the way that the country is going in terms of the corporate takeover, if you will, and have a model for the way forward, and it's based on, you know, solid organizing. I mean, the other thing you can say about this is that it's just a predictable backlash,
right,
against what was, in its, at its root, a backlash, this Tea Party movement.
Well, we've,
you
been
know,
waiting
just
for it.
Pendulum swinging in the other direction. We've been waiting for it, and maybe we have it.
David Dayan from FireDogLake.com, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We got to take a break, folks. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. When we come back, we'll be talking about some of the austerity measures. But there's also a new ally in this fight in Wisconsin. I will tell you as soon as we return. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Pick up something with David K. Johnston. We'll talk to him soon, hopefully in the coming weeks. And I should also say, you know, it was interesting, David mentioned that sort of backlash against this corporate takeover. I will be playing, yeah, had a very interesting conversation with Chris Hedges last week. I guess it was maybe on Wednesday or Thursday, and pre-recorded. We will play it maybe Wednesday. I'm not sure. Don't hold me to that. Sometime this week we will play it. It's an interesting interview. When I had time to think about it after by Thursday or Friday, I guess, I started to digest it. And some very, very interesting and disturbing ideas that he has. Disturbing only in the sense that I think they're not so much ideas as they are observations, and I think they're accurate. And we will talk more about that. But one thing I keep noticing is that from different quarters, from the Financial Times to Jeffrey Sachs to Chris Hedges, you're hearing people talk about the plutocracy, and you're hearing them talk about it in a way that would be considered shrill just a number of years ago. And they're talking about it as an entity that is not just existing in this country, but because of their international nature, the plutocracy now. Because the world is flat, according to Tom Friedman and his Sky Mall leather jacket, these people don't really give a shit what happens to our society. You know, there was a time that was some leverage. Hey, we got to do something to throw a bone to the masses, because if this falls apart, or if we lose the middle class in this country, we're not going to have anybody to sell to. They don't care anymore. We have no leverage anymore. So what's happening in Wisconsin is incredibly important. And David K. Johnson makes the point via Digby that the idea that taxpayers, or that money to fund the pensions, these wonderful, huge pensions, $18,000, $22,000 a year that these state workers are getting, are coming from taxpayers. Well, yes, their entire pay comes from taxpayers. But understand that Walker's not asking them to contribute more to their pensions. They contribute every dollar that's in their pensions was contributed by state workers in the form of deferred compensation. We've talked about this many, many times. What Scott Walker is asking for that from them is not more money contributed to their pensions. He's asking for a pay cut. Pay cut from workers who, in the case of Wisconsin, already make 5% less than their counterparts in the private sector when you control for education, when you include health care and pension benefits, all of it, 5% less. Study after study after study after study in this country shows that if you control for education and you include benefits, state and municipal workers get less money than their counterparts in the private sector. Scott Walker's proposals via Greg Sargent have support in exactly the places you would imagine. There was a Gallup poll that showed last week 61% of Americans oppose Walker's plan versus 33% who are in favor. Now, one thing I noticed this weekend as I listened to right-wing talk radio, as I am wont to do, I got to say, if there's anybody worse than Monica Crowley doing radio, and it's not like she... Look, I don't get offended when I hear right-wing talking points. I mean, I listen to Limbaugh quite a bit. I listen to Hannity. Hannity's bad. Limbaugh's good at what he does. He's a liar, and, you know, he's jacked up on whatever he's jacked up on at any given point. But he's actually talented at radio. Beck, also, in his own way, talented at radio. Hannity is just bad. He's just bad at it. And he was one of those guys who was lucky to be first in, got his, you know, has his Fox crew. And, you know, there's a lot of dummies out there. You know, there's people who, you know, like, McDonald's is great food, man. It's great food. Well, McDonald's is cheap. And you can, it's pre-digested. So it's easy to shove down your gullet when you're drunk.
But the fries are so good.
And the fries are so good. But it's not quality food. And Hannity is that guy. But I got to tell you, Monica Crowley is so bad at what she does that it is stunning.
She's Arby's.
She's not even... She's like some third world knockoff of McDonald's in terms of on this analogy. And the only other person who rivals her in terms of like being bad at radio is Aaron Klein. Have you heard that show?
No.
And he, it's as if he went to the Monica Crowley school of talk radio because his cadence is exactly like hers. And they have this sort of forced, like trying to be funny. And Monica Crowley has a guy she pays to sit there and pretend like he's laughing at what she's saying.
He is so, yes.
And it's the most forced, anyways. But one thing I noticed is that they all are lying about Scott Walker's bill. Remember, I'm not in favor of the unions having done this, but the unions have conceded on every fiscal point Walker wants in terms of their contracts. Every cut, every increased contribution, if you want to frame it that way, every single element of what Walker proposed, they have accepted. What they have problems with is the destruction of their union, of collective bargaining. And many on the right, you know, Twitter followers of Andrew Breitbart, who, when I pick on Andrew Breitbart, write me. I had this one guy who sent me an email, who tweeted me. I said to Breitbart at one point, you know, because I had a couple of days off, and so all I'm doing then is tweeting and trying to irritate Breitbart, which I think I do a very good job of. At one point, he got so flustered, he accidentally sent me three drafts of a tweet in retort to me that were all different. He couldn't figure out how he wanted to frame it. And then he denied that he sent three, two, and then Kyle posted a screenshot of the three tweets, but this is small bore, silly stuff. But one of his followers, I had tweeted to Breitbart, hey, good job bashing the teachers. Send, make sure you post the link of the vid when you start bashing nurses, too. And some moron, one of his followers, tweets me, since when is there nurses in public unions? And so I Google nurses public unions to find the AFSCME link that represents tens of thousands of public union nurses. And I send a link back to this guy and I go, since forever. And here's the link. And he writes me back, well, these unions are corrupt. And I said, sir, do you expect me to engage with a debate? And I said it in 140 characters with someone who 20 minutes ago did not know of the existence of these unions and now claims to know that they're corrupt. You're not, you know, I will engage people on Twitter if they're not, if they don't actively prove to me that they're morons. You know, if there was an icon for a moron and this guy uploaded it to his account, he couldn't prove to me more that he was an idiot. So I just said, we're done. And he's like, oh, try to change the topic. Anyways, so I thought it was interesting that these right-wing talkers are not dealing with this straight on, because there are many in their community who simply are willing to accept the notion unions are inherently bad, although that there's been collective bargaining for 70, 80 years in Wisconsin. Apparently now they're the problem. But aside from that, they don't even seem to be confident in selling that meme to the public. And that's interesting. It leads me to believe that there is oxygen that they're aware of that exists in this space for a movement like the one David Dayan was describing to take hold in this country. Because otherwise, they'd just be demonizing unions. And they wouldn't be having to say this is about a fiscal crisis, or they wouldn't have to lie that unions have already accepted those proposals. And getting back to this poll, who do we think supports Scott Walker's proposal across the country? Is it those who make $24,000 annually? No. They oppose Walker 74% to 14% who favor it. What about those people who make between $24,000 and $59,000? No. They oppose the proposal by 63% to 33%. What about $60,000 to $89,000? Remember, median income is around, I think, $40,000 to $50,000. What about those who make $60,000 to $89,000? No. 53% oppose the proposal versus only 41% who favor it. Now remember, this is with years and years of a wave of media criticism of unions and public service unions. But among those who make $90,000 and up, 50% favor the proposal, 47% oppose it. I wonder, and we don't see the crosstabs here because apparently Gallup doesn't realize that 70% of the wealth is controlled by people who make three times $90,000 a year? 70% of the wealth. Maybe even more than that. Maybe it's four times, five times $90,000. I bet you they're all against it. And that is why it's people like the Koch brothers who are funding, fueling this entire plutocratic movement. And I mentioned that there is a new player to the party. It's going to be interesting. I think, I don't know. I don't know enough about them. And maybe somebody will correct me on the IM on the flip side, because we're going to go there soon. But it is reported that, find out exactly where this is coming from. But there's a new person who's thrown themselves, new person, new entity, I should say, who has injected themselves into what is going on in Wisconsin. Stephen Webster at, I'm not sure exactly where this is. Anonymous targets the Brothers Koch, claiming attempts to usurp American democracy. The decentralized protest group Anonymous has a new target. Tea Party financiers Charles and David Koch for their attempts to, quote, usurp American democracy. Koch Industries and oligarchs like them have most recently started to manipulate the political agenda in Wisconsin, an announcement posted to anonnews.org. Governor Walker's union-busting budget plan contains a clause that went nearly unnoticed. This clause would allow the sale of publicly owned utility plants in Wisconsin to private parties at any price, no matter how low, without a public bidding process. The group said it would now be, quote, actively seeking vulnerabilities in Koch Industries. I'm going to give these guys one of these. I love it. And now, you know, what they're talking about is not legal. But as far as I'm concerned, it's civil disobedience. Or, you know, maybe perhaps not even civil disobedience, because in those instances, you got to get yourself arrested. But more and more, I think we are faced with powers that cannot be defeated without the help of groups like this, frankly. And it's interesting, because I don't know if Anonymous has been involved in something this involved in a political dispute that has been, that it runs across an ideological spectrum like this, or does not run across an ideological spectrum. You know, it's one thing to go after Scientology. It's another thing to help in Tunisia and in Egypt, and I presume in Libya. It's another thing to get the back of WikiLeaks. There is a online quasi-libertarian ideology. It's an online libertarian ideology that says information should be free. And this is a very interesting development. I'm going to find somebody who can give me a better sense of this, but they write, in a world where corporate money has become the lifeblood of political influence, the labor unions are one of the few ways citizens have to fight against corporate greed, the release added. Anonymous cannot ignore the plight of the citizen workers of Wisconsin or the opportunity to fight for the people in America's broken political system. For these reasons, we feel that the Koch brothers threaten the United States democratic system and, by extension, all freedom-loving individuals everywhere. It's fascinating. We are actively seeking vulnerabilities, but in the meantime, we are calling for all supporters of true democracy and freedom of the people to boycott all Koch industry paper products. We welcome unions across the globe to join us in this boycott and show you will not allow big business to dictate your freedom. In the U.S., those products were listed as Vanity Fair, Quilted Northern, Angel Soft, Sparkle, Brawny, Mardi Gras, and Dixie. All products produced by the Georgia Pacific Company. Who produces that paper that we have? Hammerhill?
I'm finding out.
Well, we don't buy any new ones. We don't need to find that out right now.
International paper.
An international conspiracy to steal our bodily fluids through our paper. So, very interesting turn of events. And at the Oscars last night, as I mentioned, the Best Cinematography winner, Wally Pfister, made a point during his acceptance speech thanking his union crew on Inception. And then, I guess, backstage, they have some, like, I don't know, like a press thing where he said, I think that what's going on in Wisconsin is a kind of madness right now. I've been a union member for 30 years, and what the union has given to me is security for my family. They have given me health care in a country that doesn't provide health care, and I think unions are a very important part of the middle class in America. We're all trying to do is get a decent wage and have medical care. I am losing my my union health care very shortly. And they have like an intermediary between COBRA and the union healthcare, which is extraordinarily high, extraordinarily expensive, like $1,400 a month. So, folks, great opportunity for me to ask you to become a member of the Majority Report. People have already told me, oh, I can hear the distance with the difference with the new mic. And we have new equipment. We had a little, the call with Dayan wasn't necessarily in great shakes today, but in general, and we need to get a phone system in here. So please become a member. And if you become a member, you'll be able to hear stuff on the flip side. I didn't get to half the stories I wanted to get today. There's a huge fracking story in New York Times. I've got some updates on Libya. I'm going to talk about the PSYOP story that broke last week, more about austerity, and this is stuff that you're missing when you're not on the flip side, plus all that talk of the raccoon cam that I'm going to be posting in the members section. I may do it today, a couple of shots of the raccoon cam. I've got two different raccoons now that I've identified just in the past week, and fortunately, like, one of them doesn't have a tail, one has a tail, so very easy to identify.
No need for the custom names.
No need for the custom names. Ironically, my cat, one has a tail, one does not have a tail. So I think the raccoons are starting to emulate the cats. I've got shots of mice eating the food, so that's all for members, though. So for you non-members, sorry. But you can support the show. You can go to majority.fm, go to the MR store, listen on the top menu, find the Amazon link, click it, bookmark it. Every time you shop through Amazon, I will get a cut. You will be redistributing wealth from a corporate behemoth into our dollar lunch fund. Plus, you can always donate your Twitter account at donateyouraccount.com/majorityfm. Stick around. On the flip side, you can IM me at Majority FM. Later this week, Chris Hedges and more great guests. We'll be right back on the flip side, members only.